we're going to start this morning with a video clip. It's only 25 or so seconds long. And some of you, particularly if you're in my generation, will recognize it. Those of you who don't, I will explain it to you when it's over. Roll.
Don't just stand there. Try and brace it with something.
Look what's happening on the edges.
Wait a minute.
Did anybody actually not recognize that? You don't have to raise your hands. So this is from the very first Star Wars movie, which was 48 years ago. Yeah, I know. So here's the summary if you don't know what the heck was going on there. So the two good guys, Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, they sneak into the Imperial Death Star space station, which is full of bad guys, to rescue Princess Leia. Good guy. And as they're escaping, they're running through the ship, trying to escape from the stormtroopers, they're the bad guys. They dive into this hatch, and it slides them down into this enormous trash heap deep inside the bowels of the ship. And as the three of them are arguing about what to do next, there's this thunderous, grinding, metal-on-metal screech that immediately gets their attention. And they realize that they have landed inside a giant trash compactor. And that noise is the walls slowly closing in to squash them like bugs. So they're doing everything they can. Chewie, Chewbacca, really strong, you know, trying to, and Luke puts the thing in there to try to stop it. Now, life feels like that sometimes, doesn't it? And whether it's actually happening or not, whether or not the walls in our lives are closing in and starting to really put the pressure on and crunch us, whenever life feels that way, doesn't matter if it actually is that way or not, when it feels like that, I heartily recommend going to Psalm 3. Now, a couple of weeks ago, it was 3 weeks ago, I guess, Pastor Tom started us with Psalm 1, which teaches us that every individual person chooses one of only two available paths in life. And Ben reminded us of this last week from Psalm 84. Well, the week before that, I guess I was last week, wasn't I? So there's only two ways to go in life. We're either one, moving towards God, facing Him, trusting in His mercy / forgiveness, because mercy is not getting what we deserve. Right? Grace is getting what we don't deserve. Mercy is not getting what we do deserve. The Bible calls those people the righteous, trusting in the mercy and the forgiveness of God. And the Bible doesn't call them / us righteous because we are good, but because of the direction by the grace of God in which we are walking. The other path, of course, is the Bible calls the wicked. And they're not called the wicked because they're necessarily what we would call bad people. But all of them are moving away from the Lord, back to Him. That's Psalm 1. Choose. Psalm 2, as we saw last week, extends those principles outward to the entirety of corporate global human history, all of which is moving inexorably, yes, I should have practiced that. Everything is moving towards one final day, the last day, when each one of us individually will stand before God to give an account of what we have done with what he gave us, an account of the path that we had chosen. Now, Psalm 3, and I think whoever it was that put together what we call the Psalter, the book of Psalms, whoever put it together knew what they were doing when they put Psalm 3 after Psalm 1 and Psalm 2, because Psalm 3 dives us directly into the thick of things. That is, okay, how exactly does one live out God's way of righteousness when the walls of active opposition against God, Psalm 2, when they're closing in, and we are hearing that terrifying crunching sound? Because those walls can be both outside and inside. Now, some of the Psalms tip us off to the specific circumstances which gave rise to their composition. And Psalm 3 is the first one of those. The author, King David, as he writes this psalm, he has been betrayed. He has been driven from his God-given, God-appointed position of power as the king of Israel. He has been run out of town on a proverbial rail. He is literally fleeing for his life. And all of this colossal implosion of David's life, all of it is brought on by one of his own children, by one of his sons, Absalom. So Psalm 3, I am reading from the NIV, which I always do. And a reminder that in my own personal reading of the Psalms, reading slash praying of the Psalms, when the word Lord in small caps appears, that's where God's name, his God-given name revealed to Moses, is actually in the text, so Yahweh. So I use that. So don't let it throw you like it sometimes throws my wife when we're reading the scriptures together. Okay, the word of the Lord, Psalm 3. Remember the subscription here, just below it, a psalm of David, when he fled from his son, Absalom. Word of the Lord. O Yahweh, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. But you are a shield around me, O Yahweh. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head. To Yahweh, I cry aloud, and he answers me from his holy hill. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because Yahweh sustains me. I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side. David is not being hyperbolic here. He's really being pursued by thousands of armed warriors. Just to be clear, it's not just, you know, poetic language. Verse 7. Arise, O Yahweh, deliver me, O my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. from Yahweh comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. The word of the Lord. So we're called to live this life of faith, trusting in righteousness by faith, trusting God. How are we supposed to do that when it just feels impossible? We have to start here. First of all, being honest with God. The slide here is not a Bible. That's an open book, which is what we are to the Lord, in spite of our efforts to write nice things in it about us. Verse 1 and 2, O Yahweh, how many are my foes? How many rise against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. Now, one of the reasons we Christians tend to be uncomfortable with so much of the Old Testament is all this enemy talk. And there's a lot of it. Jesus said, love your enemies, right? So shouldn't we not have any? And this is what makes the book of Psalms such a bracing, daily tonic for our souls, because the Psalms give us a sobering shot of authentic, Christ-like faith. The Christ-like life of faith, as that life really is, and not as we imagine it's supposed to be, or it should be, or it was going to be when we signed up to follow Christ. We've all got these pictures in our heads of how wonderful everything's going to be. It's okay. We all do it. But the Psalms give us that sober shot. So I say cheers, bottoms up, and let's drink deep. For is it not the case, friends, that the overwhelming majority of people with whom we find ourselves at odds, we're struggling with, who may even be opposed to us, how many of them are the members of our own families? That's what's going on in Psalm 3. David's son, Absalom, he's not disappointed him or done something to offend him, or gone off into a career that David's really not that crazy about. Absalom has schemed, conspired, and plotted for years to kill his own father and seize the crown for himself. And Absalom has gathered a whole posse, literally an army of David's family and friends, people in the inner circle of David's court. And he's got all these people together to help him kill his father and be crowned king by force. So when David writes this psalm, he is drowning in the wrenching grief, rage, anguish of such unbelievable treachery. Those walls. But as unbelievable as it is, David has has to believe it because it is happening. He's in the middle of it. But David knows where to go. And he knows what to do with the hardest of imaginable circumstances and the most crippling of emotions, whatever they are. David takes it all, everything he's experiencing as he's running for his life from his own son. He takes it all of it, and he lifts it up to God in worship, as worship. Now, when we're feeling this kind of stuff, we don't really feel like worshiping, do we? But David takes that nasty, horrible, crippling emotions that he's got, and he says, God, this is what I've got. This is what I'm offering you, Lord. And he does it direct, straight to God, out loud, unashamed, unafraid, feelings that are so raw and brutal and ugly. There are no pretty prayers here. If you're looking for pretty prayers in the Psalms, yeah, there's a couple. But most of them are more like this. Honest to God. That, and that alone, is what makes the difference. God's righteous life, as he describes it in Psalm 1, is not about being nice or good or spiritual. And you know what? None of the Bible is about that. The righteous life of Jesus Christ-like faith is about getting real with God. And you know what? That's what all of the Bible is about. Because he knows it all anyway. Already, we are open books to God. We can't hide anything from him. We try to. We do it automatically, but it's silly. God knows it all. And he has already proven to us in Jesus Christ, in history, in time, and in space, in a very specific spot outside of the city of Jerusalem 2,000 years ago, he's already proven that he loves us and accepts us completely anyway. We all feel opposition, trouble, anxiety, enemies pressing in on us, both from within and without. And we stew over these things. We fret and worry and despair about them and try to change our feelings. Don't bother. We are ashamed and embarrassed to see that these troubles, these enemies, whatever form they take, we hate that they bring out the worst in us. Right here, I thought I was moving along here. I was doing really good with God. And then slam, stuff comes up out of me. Am I talking to myself here? We do not quickly enough or often enough take that crap that trouble stirs up in us and take it to the Lord and use it as worship. God is not interested in pretty worship. He wants real worship, which is not pretty much of the time, certainly in our daily walks. So the Psalms model for us the lifting up of our actual emotions, what we're really feeling in all of its unchristianness, honestly, openly, and fearlessly trusting in God's mercy. Open books. Was there some area in your life this morning where you need to get real with God? You might want to jot that down if you got something to write with. Now, being honest with God nurtures trust. This is verse 3. But you are a shield around me, O Yahweh. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head. I cried out to Yahweh, and he answers me from his holy hill. The practice of learning to be honest with God, to get real with him, and it does take practice, lots of it. This does not come naturally. Right? Our sin nature is explicitly to hide, to cover up, to dodge the issue, to grab some more fig leaves like Adam and Eve. That's our nature now. So getting real with God is hard. It's work. We got to keep at it. And praying through the Psalms will help us enormously to get real. And as we do that, it generates more confidence and greater trust in God. Trust for three areas in particular. One, for protection. Many years ago, I attended a conference in Atlanta. There are about 20,000 other pastors from all over the world there. Were you there, Tom? You were. Did I go with you? Okay. Because I was going to say, I don't remember who even went with. I don't remember where I stayed. I don't remember who spoke at that conference or even what was said. I couldn't tell you anything about what was said. I recall only two incidents from that week. One, landing safely back at Bradley in the middle of a howling blizzard. Were you on that plane, Tom? You're lucky. Our plane was the last one to touch down at Bradley International before they shut down the airport. Of course, it was full of Christians and leaders, and so everybody burst into applause. We'd all been praying pretty hard. The second thing I remember, too, is I was sitting in that filled-to-capacity stadium. And again, I don't even know what the speaker was talking about. Or if anybody was talking, I just remember God whispering to me, your idol, he said, is self-protection. I'm like, so that's a problem? Yes, it is. Well, that's what a shield is for, right? One doesn't attack with a shield. It's a defensive weapon for personal safety to fend off blows in hand-to-hand combat. So God was saying to Gary that day, because you don't trust me to protect your heart, and you've taken that job on yourself, that has made you a very defensive, contentious, and rather prickly person. drop your guard, son, and let me be your shield of protection. Which does not mean you're never going to get hurt. It means the opposite. That is an attempt by me, and you, by the way, to make sure we don't get hurt. But when we let God be our shield, it means that our hurting hearts, which is what we all have, but in God's hands instead of my own, rather than growing more calloused and porcupine-ish, our hearts in God's hands, with Him as our shield, our hearts grow more vulnerable and tender and humble and merciful towards others' wounded hearts. Our hearts become more like His. Being honest with God nurtures trust for protection, for vindication. Secondly, David says, "You bestow glory on me." It's as if David is saying to God, and this is all true. I couldn't go back 3,000 years and read David's mind, but this is the essence of where he's coming from in this prayer. David says, "I did not seek this throne, Lord. I didn't try to make myself king. I didn't even ask for this. You gave it to me. You appointed me. You anointed me to be the king of Israel. And I accepted that call, that responsibility with clean hands, with a clear conscience. And I trusted you to bring it to pass." Some 20, 25, even 30 years after you made that promise. And David was tested over and over again. He had the opportunity to take the kingdom a number of times, and he wouldn't do it because God said, "I'm going to give it to you." That should remind us of David's descendant, Jesus, who indeed could have taken the kingdom, because it's his. He could have taken it in his own hands, in his own way, in his own time. But he didn't. And so David says, "Even, Lord, with all my mistakes," and by this point in his life, he's got a long list of them, "even so, I look to you now, Yahweh, my Lord. You set things right. And do it in your time and in your way and by your hand." And we trust God for encouragement. "And lift up my head," David says. And we all feel whiny and sorry for ourselves from time to time. Talking to myself again, aren't I? But as we grow more honest to God, He lifts up our heads. He answers with hope and courage and faith in Him. So this morning, for our next application, is in one of these areas in particular, you need to trust God right now. I want to circle it or put an arrow to it. Being honest to God nurtures trust and still more trust. Verses 5 and 6. Some of you American history buffs recognize this. It's Stonewall Jackson. Confederate General Thomas Stonewall Jackson, who was renowned on both sides during the Civil War for his reckless bravery in battle. He was utterly fearless. He is reported to have said, "If it's not my day to die, no bullet can harm me. If it is, no doctor can save me." What he actually did write to his wife was this: "My religious belief teaches me to feel as safe in battle as in bed. God has fixed the time for my death. I do not concern myself about that, but to always be ready, no matter when it may overtake me." Verses 5 and 6. Remember David's context now. He's on the run for his life. "I lie down and sleep. I wake again because Yahweh sustains me. I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side." So we've got awake and asleep. That pretty much covers every moment of every single day of every one of our lives, doesn't it? David understands that when he lies down to sleep and when he wakes up the next morning, it is because and only because God has so ordained it. It is God who grants us each day until he doesn't. And so David lives, as may we, as Stonewall Jackson did, fear and anxiety free, completely confident in the security of God, even with tens of thousands of troubles arrayed against us. By faith in Christ, we are as safe in battle as in bed. The last note of Psalm 3 is being honest to God nurtures trust, and still more trust as we practice it, for his ultimate and final deliverance. "Arise, O Yahweh," David says, "deliver me, O my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked, for from Yahweh comes deliverance. May your blessing be upon your people." Honesty with God. And remember, this is hard work. It's a lifelong task to be really honest and messy with God. It just doesn't fit with Christianity. That's what Christianity is. But that open book posture to God, that nurtures trust and then grows more confidence that he is indeed trustworthy. He won't fail to act on our behalf in his wisdom, to not just help us feel better, but to do something, to intervene. It's that show up, God, please show up. You deal with my enemies. You defang all my troubles. You secure my safety and deliverance, not me. You do this. It's all in your hands. And I trust you to deliver me come what may. In your time, in your way, for your glory, according to your will. So he closes with, then may your blessing be upon your people. There's a prayer. God is still answering 3,000 years later, isn't he? Okay. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.